Welcome, Alisa, my very first guest for this very intimate semicolon spaces.
Hi, Linda.
So thank you for joining me. This podcast is about pauses in life and the choices we make. This podcast can also help us think about the pauses that become new paths. Wherever you are, post-burnout, pre-breakthrough, welcome. You belong here. Dear pause makers, I'm your host, Linda, and I'm also in the middle of my own pause. So today, I'm very excited to have you, Alisa, to join me. So a quick introduction, like Alisa, she works in communications in a tech company. She's also a personal trainer. She finished, I think, two high rocks and going to do another one end of this year. I've also heard about her legendary Eurasian cooking, but I've not tried them. So let's see whether I get the invite soon, Alisa. I just love her energy. Look at her smile. And from the outside, she seems like a very unlikely pause maker. So if you're wondering why I invited her, let's hear from her. So shall we start? So Alisa, what was the last time you took a pause, and was the pause intentional?
So I think there were two key moments in my life where I took pauses. One was forced. The second one was voluntary. So I'll talk about the first one first. This was when I was in my early 20s, and it was my, I think, second job. So, and I, this particular job I really, really enjoyed and I really liked it. It brought me a lot of fulfillment, but unfortunately, I was laid off, I think, a year into the role. And that was something that was very, very difficult for me because I realized that I put a lot of my own self-worth into the job. And I think when that was taken away, I started to question who I was and whether I was any good at what I was doing. And I think that forced me to recalibrate how I worked and how work fit within life, right? So that was very early on. And then many years later, I think it must have been nearly 2 decades later. We won't talk about age. more than 2 decades later, I think it was more of a voluntary pause. So I think work was not as fulfilling as I would have liked it to be. And I had to stop and assess, sorry, what life and work actually meant to me. So, I would say that at that point in time, I realized that I couldn't expect happiness or 100% of happiness from work, even though it is, you know, as we all agree, a huge chunk of our time is spent at work, right? And then I realized I needed to find something else to fill my cup. So maybe it would be 70% work, 30% extracurricular, right? Something that would spark passion and would give me happiness in another way. However you splice the ratio, it could be 70-30, 60-40, as long as when one bucket is not fulfilling you in the way that you want it to or you need it to, at least you have other portions of your life that sort of bolster that overall score up. It's a very logical way to look at it, but that is that encapsulates how I saw the second pause in my life.
Let me go back to the first pause because that was paused. As you know, many people got laid off and the economy is not doing great. Job market is pretty stale at the moment. So tell me more about how you dealt with that. Also, you were a lot younger. Was it in communications or in some other work?
It was when I was writing, so it was for a magazine.
I see. Okay. So tell me more about how you dealt with that, I think emotionally and also any like advice for people who maybe have been laid off and stuff.
I think for that, I was very young, so it was very difficult for me because I think I didn't have the professional maturity at that time to be able to understand it for what it was. At the end of the day, to be honest, the only way to look at this is that it is business. The minute you start to bring emotions and self-worth and everything into a role, I think that is something that it will cause some level of distress should something happen. So at the end of the day, it is not about your performance. It is not about what you did or you didn't do, how well you did. None of that matters in this kind of, world that we live in today. It is essentially, if the company cannot afford certain things, if they need to make a, greater margin, then it is unfortunately the way the world works. So if you take it, basically my advice is don't take it personally. Don't let it define your self-worth, and don't let it reflect your capabilities, because it doesn't. In most cases, it is really just, it is what it is.
I love the last line, and I hear repeatedly around the self-worth piece. And so tell me more about the intentional pause. Do you think that has helped you? I guess that first episode helped you recognize what your self-worth is now, so you can make that intentional pause. Is that related, you feel?
Was that related? I think in a way it must have been, because, the growth over the years, and then, 20 years later, I was able to recognize, still not without emotion, because we are human, right? But I was able to rationalize, I suppose that is the word I'm looking for. I was able to rationalize that, okay, if I am not, if this particular job is not fulfilling me 100%, and I'm not entirely pleased or not entirely happy with it, then what else can I then do to make sure that I am happy in, life in general, right? And then I think it was just about reallocating I wouldn't call it investment, because even though you don't... even if you ratio it out, even if you say 70% work, 30% your passion, for example, it doesn't mean that you don't put 100% of your effort into that work, that 70%. It is just talking about how much you get out of it. I'm not quite sure if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Seen it, Alisa. I've worked with you. So I know what that 100% effort look like. No need to explain that part, huh? So thank you, Alisa, for sharing. And I love the it's arbitrary, right? 70-30, but tell me more about the 30%. That's interesting. How do you find fulfillment in that 30%? So that it fuels, I guess, the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It powers you through, and it gives you, I guess, greater joy, right?
Mm. So I think one common thread that has run, I think, for as long as I can remember, was the desire to give back. For however fortunate I am in life, I've always wanted to give back. And of course, I tried in many different ways. And to be very honest, life is very busy. So it's very hard to commit a certain number of hours every week, for example, to give back to society. So I struggled a lot with that. My father, he also, he worked really hard in his life. And then he got to a point where he could afford to retire. And now he does charity work full time, wherever he's needed. So he's always told me that, work hard, build your base, make sure that you are able to retire. And once you do that, you can devote, 100% of your time to whatever charities you want to, help out. But for me, I think while I understand the merits of that, that is also the older generation, right, whose primary concern was food on the table. I think the younger people today are looking for more opportunities to serve and to give back and to have life count, to have some kind of purpose in life. So I wanted it to be like an ongoing thing. So that's the base, okay, the context. I think when I've always been also into fitness, so I've been exercising since I was early 20s, I think. And I think that's I saw an opportunity, I suppose. I kind of fell into it accidentally, actually. My partner just basically said, why don't you go and take your fitness course? And then I realized, hey, maybe I could do that. And then I saw, you know, other women around me, friends, family, also struggle with a lot of, with fitness in general. And it gave me an opportunity to say, hey, I can dedicate a certain number of hours every week, and I can help, you know, the people around me in a way that I think would benefit them many, many years down the road.
So tell me about your fitness approach. Like, is it just exercising? I haven't had a personal trainer before. Maybe you should train me. but what is your philosophy and I guess your method or approach?
So for me personally, I think fitness is a amalgamation of things. It is not just being physically strong. A lot of it is mental. And it is the sort of, when I say mental, I mean it is the level of comfort that you have in your body and with your body, right? That is one portion of it. Of course, the other portion is, you know, people will say that you need to engage in social activities, you need to be happy, your mind needs to be engaged as well. So there's a lot of aspects when you talk about fitness in general. And I think the portion that I focus on, you know, with my PT sessions, is to help women especially feel more comfortable in their bodies, feel strong and capable. And I think that is a gift. I think it is a gift to feel that way with yourself. Yeah.
What do your clients come to you for? Like, I don't know, flabby arms, six packs, next high rocks. So what were the problems that they tell you?
Yeah, so what I noticed actually that a lot of them around our age start to...
Oh gosh.
Around our age start to realize that, hey, look, actually, I need to develop some strength, right? And then they start to ask questions and they start to think about what that means for them and where they were daunted before. Because the gym can be a very daunting place for women, especially with all the machines and all the weights and a lot of, like, you know, muscled men huffing and puffing about you. It can actually be very daunting for women, right? But they realize that it's something that they need to do, especially in this, in their, you know, later years, if they want to maintain a certain level of mobility later on in life. Okay, so I think that is one bucket of it. I think the second bucket is some of them come with certain pain in their body, and it's quite normal. I think pain through inactivity, it is it doesn't sound likely, but it actually is very frequent. We see this in women, and they feel like they don't understand their body, or their body has like betrayed them in that sense, and they try to, you know, they're trying to get it back. So that is, I suppose, another reason. And then of course the third bucket is I want to, you know, have a six pack and I want to have biceps and stuff like that. But I think the one thing in common that I try to instill across everyone, right, is that you need to, first of all, I think it's self-love. A lot of it is about self-love, right? It is about, it doesn't matter, like, you can have biceps, I don't know, like, they are huge, you can have a six-pack, but if you don't love yourself and you don't love the way that you look and you don't love the way that your body can move for you, right, then that's never going to be enough. So it is really about coming to a place where you say, okay, I am, maybe my goal is to become stronger, and I'm very happy to become stronger, right? And then I start to love my body and what it can do and how, you know, it can carry my weight, it can carry more weight than my weight, you know, and it can move in the way that I need it to move. And then, you know, you sort of learn that trust and that you establish that that soul and mind and body connection.
That's wonderful. I mean, Alisa, I'm very impressed. You are such a prolific trainer that I didn't even know. Yeah, I should try your classes one day. And I just... Just tell me more about, you know, I heard something about your dad, so I thought maybe we can talk to you about your dad, and I just thought maybe he's quite an inspiring person in your life for you. So tell me more about how, I guess, having a person like him in your life has shaped, you know, your journey so far. And maybe you as a person, I don't know. Are you rolling your eyes? No, right?
No, I'm trying to like not cry.
Okay.
My dad is very important to me. I think more than I can say, more than words can express. My father is, I don't even know how to explain my father. My father is, he believes in unconditional love, but he also believes that unconditional love has to be paired with discipline. But for some reason, when he disciplines you, it's very clear that he's doing it out of love. And the your behavior is, has no direct impact on the amount of love he gives. So basically, that's unconditional, right? And he makes that very clear. So I think that for that reason, I do respect him. The second reason, I suppose, or the second thing my father believes in is everybody is equal. So if you look, if you look at the way that, he speaks to a CEO, for example, and you look at the way that he speaks to, I don't know, the coffee shop aunties that are selling like drinks, right? Very different environments, very different backgrounds. He speaks to them exactly the same way. There is zero, I don't know, that he's just real regardless. Like that level of realness comes through. And he's not trying to impress anyone. He's just really interested in having a conversation with them. Doesn't matter where, you know, like what they do or where they're from. Yeah, I think, and my father is fair. He's generally a very fair human being. He's always telling me we do what is right. And it doesn't matter the cost to ourselves. We must always do what is right.
Does he help you through those pauses? Just curious. Or maybe he's just silently there.
Yeah, he's just silently there.
That's what fathers do, no?
Yeah, he's silently there. He's actually just asking me why I'm doing so much in life. But he's also very hardworking, so he has really no right to, yeah, say anything about the million and one things I do every day.
I don't know, girl. I hope you are listening in later. Thank you for bringing Alyssa into this world. I guess shifting gear a little bit, going back to your stories, right? You know, sometimes we do certain things and I make choices. You know, I want to talk about how, did you have to let go of something before you could step into your whole fitness thing, or maybe even stepping into a new role? Like, what is it that you have to let go of? Or nothing?
Myself.
Interesting. Tell me.
So I think I have a lot of expectations of myself. I think it's not just expectations that we place on ourselves. I think it's expectations that society places on us, right? So sometimes that means that, you know, we work this job, we work really hard. It's all that we do day in and day out. And we produce the results, and that is good, considered success, right? I needed to let go of my definition of what success was, i.e. climbing the corporate ladder, for example, you know, being really, really strict, like maybe contributing X amount of hours every day, completing everything that I had set out to do for the rest of the week, for example. I had to let go of that, I think, when I had to redistribute. And I think that is not a bad thing, letting go of your definition of success. Fitness itself, like if we talk about fitness and letting go, a very long time ago, many, many years ago, I had a lot of body image issues. So that also came with an eating disorder, which is, you know, something that I have had to let go of slowly, little bit by little bit, every single day on this journey. Because if I'm here to help other people, I need to make sure that I am, you know, in a place, a healthy place myself.
Tell me more about that eating disorder. I mean, you make these amazing Eurasian dishes. How does that happen?
it was a very, very long time ago, and it's not something big that sort of sparked it. It was just a very small comment that, you know, someone made that I was, you know, fat. And then I think that sort of shifted my perspective or my body image perspective in my mind. And then of course, I had to I developed an eating disorder for years after that. And it was actually only training, like exercise, that helped me shift my worldview of my view of myself back. I cannot say that it is 100%. It will never be 100% like how it was before. But I think there is some kind of, I don't know, grace involved in accepting that as well, right? Grace in accepting that life is a journey. Some things may never be the same again, but it doesn't mean that it's any less, right? And so training and learning new ways that my body could move, feeling strong in my body, feeling present in my body, starting to be in awe of what it can actually do, has gone quite a long way in shifting my own perspective of my body.
Yeah, but how did you get out of it? Like, you say you battled it for years. It's a long time, Alisa. I can never imagine.
Yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah. How did you get out of it? I mean, I'm sure, you know, comments and senseless, like, feedback.
Yeah.
Can disrupt somebody's mind. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's more about the mind, but tell me, you know, how did you get out of it?
So I think there are obviously people who have eating disorders in very, very serious, much more serious circumstances. Some of them, obviously, they land in hospital and, you know, it goes on for many years and it just impacts their body and their overall health. I didn't get to that stage. At some point, when I started lifting weights, it became more important to me to be stronger than it did to be thinner. So I think that shift was what slowly helped me over the years. And until today, it is still more important for me to be strong and present in my body rather than to be skinny. So understanding your priorities, I think that is one thing. And another thing I will say is that comments on anybody's like physical appearance, even if you are going to say, oh, you lost weight, just don't say it. Like, you know what I mean? Because you really don't know what people are battling, actually. Like, I wouldn't say I looked normal, but for most of those years, I looked very normal. And people would say, you know, oh, you lost so much weight. And then I would take that as an affirmative. And in my mind, it would just spiral down to, oh, you were so fat before. You know, that's why the person has noticed that you have like lost weight and you're on the right track. You need to lose even more. So, you know, this like commenting, any kinds of comments, whether you've put on weight, you've lost weight, you just don't, like, is my advice to the general public. Yeah.
I love that. I make that mistake sometimes, and I have my own fat story, which I'll tell you later. But today is about you. So great to be bonding over fat stories, because I had my own moments and years. So you talk about, I guess, the change in your definition of success and how you have to let yourself go. Coming to the present, so what do you fight for now?
Not so much a what, but more of, I suppose, more of a general disposition or feeling. I fight for my own peace, to be able to look at myself in the mirror every day and know that for that day I've done a good job, whether it is at work, whether it is you know, with my PT, with people that I help, just or my friends or my family, I just want to know that I've done a good job. And I think that is obviously very subjective according to person. And for different people, that means different things. But that is essentially what I fight for these days.
I love that. I want a piece of my Yeah, and I guess what gets you into the flow right now, I mean, you talk about expectations of us, changing events that's happening around the world. What anchors you in everything that you do amidst all the chaos?
I suppose it's the same thing as what I fight for, is to be able to look at myself in the mirror and know that I have done something good for somebody that day.
Yeah, love it. Something fun. So, hi, Rox. Tessana. How many have you done and what are you going to do next? Who are you doing with? I sound like a mother now.
So, I've done two mixed doubles previously. And the next one I will do is a female doubles.
Tell me more. Like, how are you preparing for it? How was the last one? Anything that you like to do differently for the next one?
Yeah, okay. The last one was terrible.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it was really bad. I made the very rookie mistake of mixing two different pre-workout supplements. So that really spiked my heart rate during the race. And then I almost passed out. And I say rookie because everybody, especially a trainer, should know this. But of course, because I was trying to get to a certain goal, beat a certain time, I was blind to common sense and, you know, just in general, the right thing to do. So I sort of messed that up a little bit. It was worse timing.
Okay.
I know.
You survived.
I did. It was worse timing than the first one. But honestly, it was a lesson learned that, you know, we sometimes when we are very driven on a specific goal or mission, we sort of neglect safety and, you know, other considerations that are very much more important. And then the next one I'm going to do is a female double. So it will be lighter weight. I think it will be no less ghastly in terms of like exhaustion levels. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Mm. Are you preparing differently?
No, I think preparation will still be the same. Just, you know, endurance, lactate threshold, conditioning and things like that. But yeah, at least now it's been like
pretending to know what you're talking about, by the way.
You'd want me to go into the detail.
No. We don't need that. But yeah, all the best, Alisa. That must be exciting.
Thank you.
Is it the one in Singapore? I heard there's one in Korea.
Yeah, it's the one in Singapore. It's the one in Singapore. I am doing it with my Korean friend though.
Oh, wonderful. You should have the Korea one too. But yeah, let's not kill yourself. Huh? Do well and then be healthy. Okay, let's look to the future. I love how passionate you are with life and how energetic you are. In fact, you're helping people to be more energetic, right, with the exercises that you preach. So what do your future look like with this wild and precious life that you have?
I think it's not so much certain goals or a certain like imagery that comes to mind. I think it's more of, again, like feelings. I think contentment is one of the major sort of feeling pillars I would like to, you know, experience every day for, you know, the next few decades, for as long as I am alive, contentment. And I think that part of that contentment is, you know, fulfillment in all the aspects of life that I put in my effort and my love and my soul into, whether that is work, whether that is PT, whether that is spending time with my family and my friends, or even cooking in the kitchen. I think all these things make up, you know, who we are as people. And I think that is something that is very precious. Contentment is a very, very precious feeling.
I agree. I just need to get that invite to your house. Yeah. When is that?
Yes, when it's ready next year.
Oh, it's still a long way, at least.
I know.
Yeah, and then I guess before we wrap up, you're my first guest. Semicolon Spaces is about pause makers, and I believe everyone has a story, you know? So who would you like me to invite to the show?
I would actually like to... Okay, well, I would like to hear from you, actually, because your pauses have been quite interesting. but I actually, in that same vein, right, I would be keen to hear, actually, from, you know, a woman who has perhaps given up her career to sort of maybe look after her new family. And how sort of that felt like, what that did to her, how sort of she overcame. Because I think, and then I suppose how she maybe returned to work, or how she's managed to find, you know, solace, or not solace, but like joy beyond the traditional, you know, women are at work and they are independent and earning and stuff like that.
Wow, just curious. Are you starting a family soon that I don't know about?
No, I'm not. I'm not. But I think it's... I'm always curious about how, you know, because I think women have grown in independence over the last few decades, right? If you look at our maybe grandmothers, if you compare us to our grandmothers, we are far more independent, and a lot of women are now going at life sort of alone, and they relish that independence, right? Being able to contribute as much as men in the household. And I think a lot of self-worth also comes from that equality, right, that we have managed to strike over the years. And I just wonder how the process or the journey is like for a woman who has had to maybe exchange that sort of, you know, independence for another kind of independence, right? As like a full-time mother and stuff like that.
Great. You actually read my mind. I just booked my friend for that exact same narrative that you just talked about. But a lot more heartfelt. So look out for it. And thank you. Thank you, Alisa, for joining me today. And I mean, I've learned a lot about you then our years together as friends and as co-workers. So thank you so much for sharing. And I hope our listeners also can learn a few things from you. I love how you always talk about it's not things or people that define things, but more about the feelings that you're looking forward to and how you want to bring that into your life. And to me, that's inspiring, because I think a lot of people, you ask them about their goals and what they like to create, they tell a whole list of laundry things, right? And that's not what I'm hearing from you. So I'm very inspired. I hope that I can also learn from you because I'm one of those little laundry list as I'm doing this podcast. And yeah, so I want to walk away also reminding myself that I think it's not just about what we want to achieve, but also what is the feeling that we want to attain. But yeah, thank you, Alisa.
Thank you so much.
I love your stories. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Linda, for having me.
See you soon. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.